corn, soybeans, and wheat higher on the day. Hogs trimming some of the fat. Cattle futures seem a little corn-fused. I don't know. Chip is out today. I guess I'll just have to try and clear up the clarity all by myself. Oh wait, what's this? Oh, looky there! Help is on the way! Live from the melting spot of the nation via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, I've got pro farmers, captains of cognition, all to myself, editor Brian Grady and senior market analyst Jeff Wilson. And right after the news, Varsity Joe Vaklovic from Standard Grain. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and you're stuck with me for the hour, America, right here on AgriTalk. And yeah, so don't panic, everyone. Chip will be back tomorrow. It'll be fine. We've got a great show planned for you today. I reached out to the fellows over at Pro Farmer, and I got to tell you, these guys are obsessive about information. I mean, you hear about these newsy types, and you just figure, they just sort of show up and phone it in for the kind of big stories and all that, and just sort of make up the rest. No. These are detail-oriented guys, and I'm really, really glad for that fact, because today, I'm not quite sure what to make of some of these markets. And so, and of course, we got Joe V hanging out too. Didn't I see his name appear on the thing? Yep, there he is right there. So we're in good shape. We're going to get through this together. I don't even think we need to hold hands or anything like that, so calm down. But it's going to be great. Like I said, corn, soybeans, and wheat higher on the day. Hogs were kind of the major bummer in the markets. And so I definitely want to cover that. I want to talk some South American stuff with Mr. Grady and Mr. Wilson. I don't know. We had Lance Honig from USDA NASA on the morning show earlier today, in case you didn't catch that. He's talking about the acreage survey that USDA is conducting right now. We might get into some acreage stuff. It seems like a bigger and bigger conversation, although I'm not sure that, the more we talk about it, the less I feel like we resolve. I don't know, maybe Brian and Jeff can help me out with that. But before we get too deep here, why don't I just go ahead and read the news, and then we'll move on from there. Paris wheat is maintaining support, which lent price firmness to U.S. wheat futures today. However, Western Europe and the Black Sea region are forecast to see above normal moisture during the next 2 weeks. Hard red and soft red wheat futures tested support and bounced higher in today's trade. Traders are looking for signs winter wheat will receive adequate moisture as the crop exits dormancy after a cold snap put at least some of the crop at risk of winter kill. Condition ratings trended lower in yesterday's reports. July hard red winter wheat 11.5 cents higher today, 640.25. July soft red up 13 cents, 655.5. September spring wheat 9.5 cents higher today, at 652 even. And there were some who were concerned about winter kill. Some who are just sort of, it'll be fine. There was enough snow cover. And of course, that'll depend on the specific local areas. And really, I think we are just going to have to wait and see what happens if there's adequate moisture to help this crop do what it needs to do once we come out of dormancy. And there has been talk, if you heard the weather yesterday, there has been talk it might be a little bit dry in some of those key areas. So something we'll have to kind of keep an eye on as we move ahead. Corn futures recovered from overnight losses to post a positive price performance in the day session. December futures tapped an overnight low at 463.75. That's the lowest since February 22, then rebounded to near yesterday's high at mid-session. Key resistance still at last week's contract high of 479. USDA reported this morning its first daily sale since February 12, since before Valentine's Day. Private exporters sold 175,000 metric tons of corn to Japan for new crop delivery. And some rains did fall in Brazil. Argentina remains dry, however, and crop stress is expected to intensify. May corn futures 6 cents higher, 544.25. July corn gained 4.5 cents to close at 531.5. December corn 475.25 at the close. That's up 6.5 cents on the day. Soybean futures also recovered from losses in the overnight and scored solid gains by the close of the day. May futures firmed above the 10 and 20-day moving averages, encouraging technical buying. Resistance is the contract high from Feb 25 at 1445 and three quarters. The combination of a slow harvest pace and strong demand for Brazilian soybeans has led to a lineup of 19 million metric tons of soybeans at Brazilian ports, which is the largest in history. Brazil's soybean harvest did advance 10 percentage points over the past week to 25% complete. That's still short of expectations. Slowest pace for this time of year since 2010 and 11. May soybean futures 21 and one quarter cents higher, 14.12 and a half. July added 17 and three quarters to 13.98 and three quarters. November bean futures closed at 12.29 and three quarters. That's up 10 and one half cents on the day. May cotton was 58 points lower, 90.99. December cotton slipped 34 points, 84.65. Fat cattle futures managed to close in positive territory, although boxed beef values declined yesterday, and futures maintain a premium to the cash market. April live cattle, 45 cents higher, 119.42 and a half. June cattle up 25 cents, 117.75. March feeders fell 67 and one half cents to 136.52 and one half. And let's get to the snout side, where lean hog futures posted moderate losses in today's session on lower product values and light movement. April lean hogs 237 and one half lower, 85.35. June hogs a buck 47 and one half lower, 93.47 and one half. Varsity Joe Vaklovic, Standard Grain. Good afternoon. How are you, pal?
What's up, buddy? How are you?
I'm pretty good. Pretty good here. Quite the jump in soybean futures today. Is that our highlight at the moment?
I just think the fact that the markets were able to kind of reverse the overnight losses was impressive. Still, like you alluded to earlier, we didn't really do anything crazy in terms of the technical side today. We haven't made new highs. New crop corn, I think, was actually the contract that got the closest to contract highs. That beef corn, 479 is kind of the big number, and we got within a couple cents of it. But, you know, this has been just kind of run-of-the-mill volatility with these higher prices. You're seeing these bigger trading ranges throughout the day and also throughout the overnight session. I think it's just kind of become the norm.
On the livestock, now, both the cattle and the hogs had lower product values, but somehow cattle, despite the premium futures hold, managed to firm up, while lean hogs just kind of tanked. You got any thoughts on the livestock?
Well, the hog market had probably been due for some sort of correction. That had been really a pretty strong bull market. The cattle had a couple of ugly days, and the cash cattle has not done any favors to the futures market. We've just been stuck in the mud at that 114 level for a good 3 weeks or so. I'd probably still say, in the case of hog, the trend is higher, and cattle, we're starting to get to the point where I'm kind of questioning that a little bit.
Real quickly, are we at the point where we're at a weather market here? Weather market in South America, waiting on the weather for the emergence of the winter wheat crop. Weather market too soon?
I think the U.S. weather market is going to be the bigger thing, but Brazil's got some issues. Argentina's got some issues. Lots of weather, lots of different places to watch.
Right on. That's Joe Vaklovic from Standard Grain. Thanks for swinging through, pal. Davis Michelson here on your AgriTalk. I've got Brian Grady and Jeff Wilson, pro farmers, captains of cognition. Coming up here, we've got the full hour together. Stick around for more AgriTalk. Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone. Welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. Thanks for tuning in today. Your pal, Davis Michelson, here behind the big green leafy microphone of AgriTalk in Chip's stead. He will be back tomorrow for the full day. So we've got today to kill, and I can't think of any better way to do that than to spend some time really digging into these markets with the guys from Pro Farmer, editor Brian Grady, and senior market analyst Jeff Wilson. Let's start with you, Brian. How you doing? You're all over the AgriTalk shows, but we usually just get quick hits from you, so it's nice to check in with you on a deeper level. What say, buddy?
Oh, yeah. I love being here in the afternoons and like you said, talking a little bit deeper on things and digging deeper and just looking forward to it.
Good, good. And of course, senior market analyst Jeff Wilson. Glad to have you aboard, Jeff. How you doing, pal?
Good, Davis. Temperatures good, are good. Warming up. The sun's out. The snow's melting. Everything's good. Let's get into the spring.
Yeah, and I think I even saw a headline that says, at least for my local area here, temperatures are expected to continue warming. Are you having the same good fortune up there in the great state of Wisconsin?
Yes, we are.
All right.
Keep it coming.
Spirits are high. We're ready to go. We got our pencils sharpened. Jeff, I know that you watch South American weather fairly closely, closer than I do anyway. And I want to kind of zero in just a little bit on the South American weather and, of course, you know, what that means for their crops, but also the impact on exports, and maybe talk a little bit about the slow soybean harvest. Can you help us get our hands around where we're at with that right now?
Sure. For the last couple of weeks, the market has been kind of digesting the idea that the crops may not be as small as what was anticipated a month ago or so. We got some timely rains in Brazil and Argentina, but it continues to rain now in Argentina. It continues to keep the soybean harvest slow and the planting of the safrina crop delayed. And now Argentina, after refilling the soil moisture back in February, it's turning dry, and we're going to probably moving from a situation where maybe 10% of the crop was dry to maybe 25, maybe 35% of the crop will be dry and under some stress over the course of the next week as temperatures rise, maybe as close as 100 degrees down there with very little rain. The next rainstorm is kind of a mixed model forecast out there coming sometime after March 10. If those rains don't materialize, then that can provide some more worries about both the Argentine beans and corn as they move through their critical development period of pod setting, filling, and grain filling.
Now, Brian, there was a lot of talk about how all this could impact the export window for U.S. soybeans. Is that window open, and to what degree, what evidence are we seeing one way or the other on soybean exports?
Yeah, I just want to clear up one thing. I think Jeff said it continues to rain in Argentina there at the beginning. He meant Brazil, just misspoke on that one, so I want to make sure that's clear. Okay. But in terms of the exports, I do think it has kept our window open a little bit longer. Probably the bigger story would be is if after Brazil starts shipping out the new crop soybeans, and we've seen videos and pictures and we've heard the reports out of Brazil, the quality issues and things like that. If they get some soybean shipments rejected and by anyone, but primarily by China, that would be the bigger story in my opinion. So that's something to watch down the road, and that hasn't happened yet. But the ship lineup is incredibly long right now, record long as a matter of fact, of Brazilian ports. So the impact is immediate and ongoing. And, you know, the impact of the United States is we just don't have a whole lot of old crop soybeans left out there to export beyond what's already committed and or shipped. You know, at this point in time, it's, you know, it's slim pickings and scraping the bottom of the barrel type of stuff. But we'll see. Brazil's exports are going to eventually hit their stride. But like I said, watch that if there's any kind of cancellations on their shipments because of quality issues with the crop.
Record number of boats lined up there to load soybeans coming out of Brazil. Do you have any sort of concept or idea of how long it might take just to physically get those loaded and to finally get, like you say, to kind of get some momentum going
from exports
out of the country?
Reports out of Brazil say it would take about a month and a half, so 45 days or so, for that to be cleared up and somewhat back to normal. So we're not talking about a quick solution by any means. And that's assuming that the rains normalize and the harvest increases here and the flow of soybeans is more normalized to the ports and those types of things. So we're talking about, you know, more than a month out. At the moment,
Jeff, from what Brian talks about there, it sounds like we need to maybe continue to slow the pace of U.S. exports out. I mean, the buzzword has been ration demand. Are we doing that at these prices right now? Sufficiently are we doing that right now?
Well, Brian has it right. It's all about whether or not they get their crop out and whether or not it gets rejected. I mean, basically, our prices are 30, 40 cents below or above Brazilian bean prices for March, April, May. So it's not like we're going to get new sales. And all we got to do is ship what we have on the books, and we're going to hit the export target. If we get more, then this tight supply situation at 2.5% of stocks to use ratio gets even tighter, and then that becomes a story. So it's not a matter of getting the shipments to slow. We're going to ship what we have. It's a matter of whether we get any new sales. New sales are the key if you want to get bullish on U.S. exports.
Mm-hmm. Brian, I haven't heard the word pipeline come up much on the show lately. Is there a reason for that?
It depends on what you're asking in terms of pipeline, but we're pipeline supplies basically for old crop soybeans here in the United States. Our estimate on old crop ending stocks is 115 million bushels right now. We consider that to be pipeline, and then if you tighten that up a little bit more, then you're even a greater degree of being basically out of soybeans at that point in time.
Jeff, we've talked about South American weather in reference to the beans. Take us over to the Safrinha corn planting side for a while there. It sounded like we were well behind schedule down there. What's our update on the Safrinha crop?
Well behind normal. But there is a pretty good incentive to plant even past this window. The financial incentive is there. You know, it's kind of like a U.S. farmer. Come June, if the price is right and the conditions are good, why not put the crop in? Look, those guys don't have any land costs. They're harvesting beans first. So putting the corn on, all you have to do is cover your cost of putting the crop in. And so the story would be, plant as long as you can because you have this, record type prices in terms of delivering those later this summer.
Brian, our sources, I'm thinking of Dr. Michael Cordonier. He seems, I don't know if I would say positive, at least neutral to positive on the potential for the South American Safrinha crop. Am I reading that right?
Well, and he's below others with his 105 million metric ton estimate. So, some are upwards, USDA, I think, is 109, and some are upwards of 110 million metric tons. So he's below that. So I wouldn't read too much into his neutral stance at this point in time. He has concern, and it's the late planting. It's the increased odds that the crop will run out of moisture by the time it pollinates and fills late in the season. And it's getting timely rains through May and into early June to get that crop to the finish line. I think we're starting to see maybe a little bit of hint of some concern coming out of Brazil with reports there in Mato Grosso that maybe the acreage won't be quite as big as what they had previously talked about. We aren't seeing any major reductions, but maybe some of the farmers won't plant as many acres as what was originally planned is kind of the talk, and then that potential for maybe a yield hit later on. So a lot of uncertainty, and that's an uncertainty toward the crop that accounts for roughly about two-thirds or to three-quarters of total production in Brazil in any year.
We saw Japan step up for a daily sales here. Is there a way to read too much into that, Brian?
Oh no, I think that that's something that the corn market probably needed. We'd gone since February 12th without a daily corn sale. You think back to the first 6 weeks of the new year, and it was laden with daily sales announcements specifically on corn. Now we finally get one. So we'll see if there's more that follows. But there's some buyer interest underneath the market still, and that's important.
All right. Well, we've been through some South American weather. We've been through some soybean export stuff. I do kind of want to touch back on corn quickly when we come back on AgriTalk. I've got Pro Farmers Brian Grady and Jeff Wilson. You're tuned to AgriTalk. Time now for headlines ripped from Pro Farmers. First thing today, the soybean lineup, which we were just talking about at Brazilian ports, at its longest on record. South American crop consultant Dr. Michael Cordonier raised his Brazilian bean crop projection as weather concerns ease. China's ag ministry says it will crack down on the production and sale of counterfeit low-quality seeds. President Joe Biden's nominee for trade chief said she would work to ensure that tariffs imposed on Chinese goods are appropriate, signaling no immediate changes to the levies. USDA Secretary Vilsack says ag is well-positioned to give Biden early wins on climate change. Vilsack also believes the government needs to subsidize rural internet. And House Democrats today unveil a clean energy bill. And finally, the freight rail industry ramping up its push for dedicated funding. Hey, Pro Farmers knew all of this hours ago. Get a jump on the day with First Thing Today by visiting tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. On your favorite radio station or your preferred digital device, AgriTalk is live every weekday.
In fact, we're live today, right now. Your pal Davis Michelson here on AgriTalk. Thanks for tuning in. Chip will be back tomorrow. Never fear. He's just off doing some stuff. He's fine. He's fine. Before we get back to the conversation with Pro Farmers Brian Grady and Jeff Wilson, let me quickly run down the closes for you, where July hard red winter wheat was 11 and one half cents higher at the close, 640 and one quarter. July soft red gained 13 cents to 655 and one half. May corn futures 6 cents higher, 544 and one quarter. July corn gained 4 1/2 cents to close at 531 and one half. May soybean futures 21 and one quarter cents higher, 1412 and a half. July beans added 17 and three quarter cents today, 1398 and three quarters. May cotton 58 points lower at 1999. On the livestock side, June cattle added 25 cents to 117.75. March feeders fell 67 and one half cents to 136.52 and a half. And April lean hogs 237 and one half lower, 85.35 on today's close. Again, Pro Farmers Brian Grady, Jeff Wilson with us, fellas. I appreciate your time. Brian, let me swing over to you because we dug a little deeper into the soybean exports. Didn't quite get to the corn exports with much specificity. We got plenty of sales going here. Is the shipping pace is kind of what I'm concerned about. Are we moving them out quickly enough, Brian?
Well, Monday's inspections number for the previous week was strong. So that's an encouragement, and that's along the right path now. So that lowered the weekly total we need the remainder of the marketing year. And so I think that as the soybean shipment pace slows, and it will, there's no doubt about that, then the corn has an opportunity to pick up. And we just aren't seeing a whole lot of competition from wheat at the moment. So I think the opportunities are there to not only hit USDA's export projection, but to possibly exceed it. So, and we still have work to do, no doubt about that. But I think that possibility is there. So USDA is forecasting exports at 2.6 billion bushels for the current marketing year. We see potential maybe to go up to 2.65 billion bushels if everything goes right into the end of the marketing year. If not, and all those sales don't get shipped, some will be rolled into the new crop marketing year and give us a running start, so to speak, on the new crop shipments.
Very good. Jeff, take us to wheat country. It feels like wheat maybe kind of needs to grab a gear here, but are we just in sort of a holding pattern waiting to see what happens when the spring thaw comes? We get that, we exit dormancy. Is it kind of a roll of the dice on the weather forecast right now for the wheat market?
Well, the exports have been slow. Or slowing. In fact, we hit a marketing year low in terms of new sales last week, and the shipments have been slow. So we need to see that start to improve. I think the break we've seen in the last week makes U.S. wheat a little more competitive on the world markets, especially with European prices moving up and even some of the Black Sea prices moving up this last week. Our biggest concern in terms of the U.S. export program is that we don't have very much of a freight advantage. In fact, we're at a disadvantage to a lot of buyers. So that can we we may have made it a low enough of a price that it becomes attractive again for overseas buyers, but sales are definitely going to need to improve. Now, the next 3 weeks are probably pretty important to find out how much damage actually occurred to the U.S. winter wheat crop from that Arctic blast we had 2 weeks ago. And right now there are some showers in the forecast for the next couple of weeks, and that would be welcome given how dry it is out there for that wheat to recover from any damage, at least any crop that's not dead already. It needs to have cool and wet conditions to make any kind of yield potential or rebuild any yield that was lost or slightly hurt from the cold.
Well, and Jeff, on the export side, I mean, spring is usually a pretty decent season for exports for wheat, right? Maybe you expect a little pickup here?
It can be variable. It all depends on what the overseas competitors are doing. We have an export tax that was increased as of March 1 in Russia. The Europeans are quickly depleting their export surplus, and so maybe we'll see some increased sales. Now, Australia is going to have a record crop this year, and they're going to be a big competitor in Asia, and Canada still has spring wheat to sell. So it's going to be tough, and you know, probably the best news that the wheat market had today was seeing the dollar start to rally the last week or so, and then it's pulling back now from where it probably should have. So if the dollar could continue to weaken, that would be very helpful for improving U.S. export sales of wheat.
Outstanding. Well said, Jeff. Let's move on to the livestock market. Brian, we saw higher fat cattle values today by just a little bit, and it does have me scratching my head. And, you know, I know what you're thinking. You can't just look at one day. I understand that. But we've got, overall, we've got premiums built in the futures to their respective cash markets. Are we seeing some of that premium finally come out? And if so, how much could that impact trade moving forward?
Yeah, that definitely drove trade over the past 2 weeks here from mid-February on. You know, today's price, actually, we'll see if we put in a short-term low or not. But like you mentioned, the futures is still premium to the cash market, and that's anticipation that we'll see the market rate supplies decline as we move through spring and some optimism there. Optimism on the demand side of things that as COVID vaccines are more widely distributed in the U.S. economy and the global economies continue to rebound, that we will see some demand strength there. And so that's all tied into those premiums. But they got a little bit too rich, aided by some of that probably over exuberance, and we've taken some of that out. So I think that you wouldn't want to see the premiums get too wide again, and that would be something that we need to watch going forward.
Brian, I want to ask you about African swine fever. It's come up again. Apparently cases are on the increase there. Is this a story that has any impact on the market, or is it kind of one of those things like, oh boy, here we go again, let me guess, more ASF, and futures just sort of become numb to it?
That was largely what drove us to new contract highs, and now the past 3 days we backed off of those contract highs, but in the hog futures. But Chinese and African swine fever and mutations of that, or variants of that initial outbreak that they had over the past couple of years, is a concern in the marketplace, you translate that, and it could potentially mean that China is in for more U.S. pork than what was originally projected by USDA for the 21-year calendar year. And so that, I think, is some of that exuberance that we've seen in the futures. How far we pull back on this correction, I think ultimately it is just a correction at this point in time.
Jeff, some pressure on the product markets. Well, yesterday, anyway. I was going to say this week. It's only Tuesday, so who the heck knows? People aren't buying sausages all of a sudden? What's the deal there?
Well, today was not a sausage worry day because the pork cutout values jumped $7.
Oh, looky there. Okay.
And it was led by bacon. Pork bellies jumped more than $23 at the midday price quote. So that was a good sign. And the beef continues to be a little soft. Seasonally, it's usually soft. But, you know, we pushed the beef cutouts to the highest in a couple of years just last week. And I think it's due for a correction. It tends to be soft in March before we get into the summer grilling season. So a little bit of pullback. The key is just, you know, last year we proved that beef and pork demand is a lot better than anybody expected, and people are learning to eat at home and make their meals at home, and that's going to be a long-term positive factor. They may not go out to eat as much at restaurants, or probably enough restaurants that have closed that it's going to be a damage. But as Brian said earlier, when we open these markets and we get people dining again, I mean, more cities are opening up their restaurants to in-house dining, and that's going to be positive. So that all those pipelines need to be filled with beef and pork, and that'll take time, and hopefully all that adds up to further demand. But I'm very impressed with the fact that the U.S. consumer continues to be I think the consumer is learning how to make meals at home. Mm-hmm. And they can and they're using more meat, and they're finding that it's a great meal for the family, and it costs a lot less than going out, and you can get, you know, a great steak or a pork chop or whatever it is you're cooking, and have a great meal.
Right. Right. Brian, I'm going to ask you the million-dollar question, and if I like your answer, I'm going to write a book. But Packer margins are super, super good right now. Why are we not seeing that push cash bids?
Well, you know, I think capacity is somewhat of it. You know, the ability to get the hogs is somewhat. But, you know, you look across the board and beef and pork margins, and they're gross margins. Keep that in mind. So it isn't necessarily, when you look at those margins, what they're making. It's what they're making before they have their expenses built in and stuff like that. So, but definitely they're making money. No, absolutely no doubt about it. And so you would expect that we would see stronger cash markets moving forward. So that's something to watch. Now, keep in mind, the cash hog market is so limited. Everything is sold on contract anymore, that the traditional cash market is just a very limited instrument in the price discovery process.
Outstanding. Well, fellas, we've about run the table here on the markets, but if you don't mind, I'd like you to stick around through the final segment here, because I want to take a broader look. I want to talk inflation. I want to talk money movement, and maybe even commodity demand in China, strengthening economies, rebounding from COVID. Let's just take the lid off and take a wide view in the final segment of AgriTalk. Stick around, everybody. Oh, this is great.
You're listening to the new AgriTalk with Chip Flory and me, the handsome newsman, Davis Michelson.
Crazy. Welcome back to AgriTalk. Your pal, Davis Michelson, here. Thanks for sticking around, everybody. I've got one more segment with Pro Farmers Brian Grady and Jeff Wilson. Jeff Wilson, I've got a question for you. What do you make of these guys named Jeff, whose names are spelled with a G? Is there anything to that? Because they would spell it G-E-O-F-F-R-E-Y. That seems like a lot of work. That's like me spelling Davis. D-E-I-G-H-V-U-U-S. Like, what do I need all these letters for? What am I missing?
Well, you just have to be British. So
is that what it is?
That's what it is.
And we did have Jeff Cooper on this morning, who is a Jeff with a G guy. So I gotta tread lightly here. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I just wondered if there was a thing there.
Davis, right. I'm disturbed that you actually spent time thinking about this.
I did, and I actually wrote them down so I would get the spelling right and wouldn't sound like a doofus on the air. Good thing I didn't sound like a doofus. That makes you think. Jeff, talk to us about inflation. What's our risk here? What do we like moving forward? What are you rooting for inflation-wise?
Well, I think it's, you know, inflation takes a long time to work through the system. We've had this huge influx of Fed money. Now we got the federal stimulus that's, you know, trillions of dollars. And all of that is eventually inflationary. The question is, how long of a lag will there be before we hit you know, real inflation or much higher inflation. The Fed wants it to be, you know, plus 2% for a year. Well, we're not quite there yet. So we're right now the flow of money into commodities is been there for called 3 or 4 months. It probably will continue. You had some of the big banks talking about, you know, returns on commodities are going to be 15, 20% over the next 12 months. And that should, you know, while clearly that's more focused on industrial metals, maybe precious metals and energy, you know, the Goldman forecast was only for like a 5% increase in ags. And so money should continue to come in. Last week, we basically had a panic attack in the financial markets. You saw the 10-year Treasury notes jump to 1.6%, the highest since more than a year. And so basically the bond market was saying, we're worried about inflation. We need higher interest rates. 1.6% if we're going to 2% inflation this year. You really want to hold a 10-year note for 10 years when inflation's 2% and rising? So, you know, it's going to take time. But the story is going to stay there for months to come. And, it, you know, whether or not that results in, you know, a situation that the money continues to flow, because we already have relatively large net fund positions in the grain markets and in the livestock markets. But more importantly, those passive investors, which is more retail, the index funds that buy baskets of commodities, that's up like 40% in the last 6 months. And so a lot of money's come in, and now it's just a matter of how much more money can we get into these markets.
Mm-hmm. Brian, you want to speculate on that? How much more money can we get into these markets?
Well, what we've seen is the equity markets, you know, increased volatility around the recent highs and the recent all-time highs. And so I think that that's the first warning signal that maybe the stock market's getting a little bit long in the tooth in terms of this rally. No guarantees that it's going to happen anytime quickly, but, you know, just the sectoral money flow, if we see it come out of equities and into commodities in a broad-based manner, then that is a real story. And right now it's, I would call it somewhat of a trickle kind of, you know, not an active flow at this point in time. And so that's something to watch as we move forward. Do we see the investor saying, well, the stock market's a little bit too rich, we're not getting our returns there, let's go into commodities and you know, with both feet and see if we can get something better for our return. And so that's something to watch on that front.
The song sort of remains the same though, doesn't it, on raw commodities? I mean, we're talking about that five-letter word China when we're talking about raw commodity demand, and we gotta have it, Jeff.
Well, they're the biggest importer of most commodities, so yeah, they're going to continue to come for the market. I thought it was interesting today that one of the Chinese central bankers was saying that he's worried about bubbles developing in markets, and it's like, yeah, sure you are. You just want the markets to come back down so you guys can buy some more. So, you know, they're going to keep buying copper. They're going to buy steel. They're going to buy soybeans. They're going to buy pork. They have a situation where their economy is growing faster than ours, 6, 7, 8%. And that's, you know, they can't supply everything that they need. And so the Chinese buyers are going to continue to come into the market, but they're good traders, and they're, you know, they're going to talk the markets down and then buy the break. And then when the markets get up, you know, they'll take off their long hedge positions and sell into it. So, you know, you can just count on the Chinese to be major buyers of commodities for the long term. It's going to be very difficult for them to get anything but rare earth minerals into a surplus situation where they're exporting that kind of a commodity.
Those rare earths, Brian, I feel like those could be a battleground sort of a thing, a hook that maybe China has in our jaw as we begin to, you know, look at things like electric vehicles and stuff. Are you creeped out at all by that, or is it just me?
Oh, no, I think that is a battleground as we move forward. You know, Jeff hit on it, though, with China's economy came out of COVID much better shape and much quicker than the rest of the world did. And its demand for raw commodities is only going to increase moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jeff, we are almost out of time. Your closing thoughts on today? Anything else you want to leave us with?
I think the story is really about the financial markets. What are interest rates going to do? This whole inflation story is going to play out over the long term. But now the focus, at least in the grain markets, is all about the weather and planning and how all that comes, because we're slowly moving past the weather situation in South America.
Brian Grady, the last word is yours, sir. Go.
Yeah, a lot of dynamic stuff happening fundamentally in the grain markets right now. A lot of stuff happening on the world front in terms of the recovery from COVID and all that stuff. And then you throw the inflation stuff on top of it. So, I think volatile and potentially exciting times are ahead.
Brian Grady, Jeff Wilson from Pro Farmer were my guests today. Fantastic conversation. Be back tomorrow morning. Jim Mintert and the Farmer Forum and Chip will return to AgriTalk.